the person who ran looked after Tuckton House, this place. Was Prince Chertkov. They were all the high ups there, you see. And that was the trouble with Tolstoy's wife, because I should think nowadays you would say there was a kind of homosexual relationship between Tolstoy and this Prince Chertkov, because I remember on a later occasion, about, I used to go every year, whenever there was a holiday, I went there. I learned rowing there. I could row anywhere. And I learned a little bit about gardening. I helped a little in the orchard. Well, once I was coming out of Tuckton House and going for a walk, and a fat lady ran up to me and said, "Is he there? Is he there?" in lovely English. I never could make out whom she meant. So she said, "You see," she said, "I'm Countess Tolstoy, and that horror is there, the man my husband lives with." Is that's not being taken, is it? That's wicked, rather than you come to still leave it now. Don't like it, because it's historical. Every word is to the point. Well, you see, and it was this strange suspicion on her part of those that this Prince Chertkov had taken away her husband's affection. That was the beginning of everything, because his wife, as you know, did all the writing for Tolstoy and editing and worried about family and that. Years and years afterwards, when Claire and I went to the same place for a little holiday, Tolstoy's nurse came along. That was already when the revolution had taken place. We slept out in that beautiful garden under a great big cedar tree. And she came along and said of the atrocities, wasn't it, or what they were doing to the family, the daughter, Tolstoy's daughter, what they were doing to Tolstoy's home. By they meant, she meant the Bolsheviks. And spoke on with tears in her eyes about it.
Well, she felt as though she was a kind of mother, a paternal feeling.
Yes.
Paternal feeling.
Well, she...
Because,
she.
Well, in England as well, nurses became part of the family.
Yes.
She felt that. Great stout lady.
Well...
What was happening?
So that, you see where the pacifism comes in there. I was at home in the pacifist movement. Now,
Constantine?
Well, yes, you see, another person who was there, Claire reminds me, was the nephew of Sibelius. They had all those people. When I was there, Maxim Gorky was there. I suppose those names mean nothing to you, do they?
Yes. Of course they do.
Do they?
What was Maxim Gorky like?
What was he like? Well, is that on or off?
It's on.
It's on. Maxim Gorky was... Maxim Gorky, as he was there, the subject was Tolstoy. He was the sweetest man. He taught me rowing. He was a very... little taller than myself, with a pinched face, white face, and a moustache coming down, even, you would say, in the modern style, you know, coming...
Drooping.
Drooping and coming right down to the chin. And spoke a lovely English. The English of foreigners is a much more beautiful English than ours. He spoke lovely English and spoke about Tolstoy. He said to me, do you know, in England people swear a lot, don't they? But I've never heard swearing like Tolstoy's here.
Did you ever hear Tolstoy swearing?
Well, the only time I saw him was at Tufton House when I was this, and he was on this cedar tree standing in the top, and as we came in, I came in with the person Claire just mentioned, Konstantin Saranchov. I came in with him, and he started barking from the tree, then jumped down, and I think he was, I don't know, I would say he was about 60 then, and he came rushing down in his peasant thing, and that was about all. I think he more or less left the place. He used to come occasionally to inspect and see how things are working there. So I didn't hear him swear, but he's a very sportive chap, very, very childlike chap. But Gorky was young and a very happy man, though he wrote the gloomiest books in the world. But that's very interesting, you see. All these people were opposite to public representation, completely opposite. You know, you're young and you can take it for granted in that if you hear something about a well-known figure, take the opposite for granted straight away, and you'll find yourself more, I won't say completely correct, much more correct. We've happened to know later on very many of the great people of the world, and I assure you they were completely opposite. If you came with such prejudices, well, those prejudices soon went if you were at Tufton House.
Is it still there?
It's still there. Last time we were in that neighbourhood, we started walking in that direction. We didn't reach it, did we? We've been there.
You mean when we went right to court?
When you were staying with the kids at Westminster, at Southbourne. Remember, suddenly it came to us, we must see what Tufton Hill. And we didn't reach it, but I understand it's a big place.
It was Southwood.
Well, it was Christchurch. Christchurch it was,
Christchurch,
you see.
Yes.
Yeah. But I heard.
Well, it doesn't really matter, does it?
But I heard that it's become a kind of palatial eating place. Not under the same auspices, but it's been sold because...
Pernod died.
Because the people responsible died.
What were you about to tell me about Sibelius's nephew and pacifism?
Well, it was a pacifist, completely pacifist household.
Oh, I must and describe him. He was one of the most beautiful people.
I've got a portrait of him here.
It's not good.
No.
He was gentle, quiet, and understanding, very handsome. And he committed suicide.
That's
one of the extraordinary...
Later, yes.
Extraordinary occurrences.
You see, the revolution...
last person in the world you'd think would do it. Gentle and very helpful to everybody. Almost a saint. He committed suicide.
A great friend of Edward Carpenter. Have you come across his name at all? You would amongst pacifists, I see. He was his real intimate friend. Well, I'm only telling you this because when the war came, I had no doubt at all, not through conceit, not, I don't think cowardice came into it, I don't think all those feelings, I had no doubt at all that I would not be of the war. But I had also another feeling. I learned at this place through, we used to sit in the evening here, there with its long white wood table right across and eat, have these, you know, bread and cheese and apples, everything fresh from the garden and salads and things. We used to sit and talk a great deal. And the people who were there, Tolstoy's biographer, Aylmer Maud, came and stayed at the Garnets, who brought out people like D.H. Lawrence, came and stayed there for weeks. There's always quite a crowd there.
Were they vegetarians?
Well, it's a question we never asked. We just ate vegetarian meals. We never I don't remember a single discussion on why people are vegetarians. It's like the pacifism. It was just that. You went there and you had the most beautiful meals in the world. And we would talk. Now, where did this... You asked me a question. I just asked you if they were
vegetarians.
No,
so
yes.
So you're talking about...
Well, we didn't discuss it. It was as natural. The idea of shooting a bird or killing an animal was just horrible to the company. I don't think it ever discussed that.
One of them,
you see, Aylmer Maud, you know, we had to go before tribunals. You've learned all that procedure now. When I had to go before, I found I couldn't say I'm a political conscientious objector or a religious conscientious. I couldn't label myself because I was just that. So I was told by Fenner Brockway, look here, if you're going before a tribunal, get a letter of some kind. There's one thing about these political animals.